Got it. All right. Good. Well, welcome. Hi. It is the, what day is it today of March?
The 7th.
It is, thank you. Thanks, Steve. The 7th of March, 2023. Hi, Debbie. Welcome to Buddhism and the 12-Step Recovery Group. My name is Anne Peruzzi, and I'm going to be guiding you this morning. We'll explore the topic of a little bit, because it is so rich and so deep, but explore compassion this morning. And I'm always very humbled and privileged, honored to fill in for Kevin Griffin. So we begin, as most of you know, I think. First, do we have anybody new to the group this morning? Maggie, hi. Great, nice to see you. Welcome. Anybody else new to the group? Awesome. So yeah, Kevin's away today taking a little holiday with his wife for her birthday. Let us have mudita, some joy for him while he takes a little break. It's really special. So we begin with a silent or a guided silent meditation for 20 minutes or so. And then I'll offer some reflections on Dharma and how it can help us with recovery, with our lives. Same thing, right? And then open it up for your reflections, your comments, your questions. Right. So before we begin the meditation, I just wanted to say that, sort of frame this a little bit. Last Friday, Kevin taught on loving kindness, and also I've been taking his class on living kindness, his book. And so naturally, when we study, things start to become more prominent in our minds and in our hearts. So a phrase kept going around, replace with the opposite. It's actually in a teaching about how to remove distracting thoughts or handling distracting thoughts, and one of the five suggestions is to replace that sticky thought with something more wholesome. And you know, for example, just for a quick example, is when we hold on to a resentment in some form or another towards ourselves or towards others. In 12 step, we're asked to, and also in Dharma, we're asked to see if we can transform that into, you know, thoughts and wishes of loving kindness or friendliness or non-ill will, non-harm. So I've been thinking about that phrase a lot, replacing with the opposite. And also the sutta that follows that one is the discourse on two kinds of thought, right? And the thoughts, there's the thoughts that lead to grasping, ill will, and harm, and thoughts that lead to renunciation, loving kindness, and compassion, the opposites. So in the spirit of that, I would like to lead a little meditation on, it's sort of a hybrid of loving kindness and self-compassion. So let's begin with the meditation. And I'm just going to set my time here, so that's helpful. So taking your seat, your posture, I should say, because of course these practices can be done seated, standing, lying down, walking. Sometimes a loving kindness or compassion practice, it's helpful to get the energy moving. So if we do some mindful walking with these types of practices, or when the mind is restless or feeling agitated, it's helpful to walk. But most of us will probably be sitting or lying down today. So establishing your posture. And sensing into your posture, your body. Perhaps taking a couple of deeper breaths. An intention to release or relax on the exhale. Notice what's here, how the body feels. That's the quality of the mind. Is it spacious, calm, restless, something in between? Just allowing, letting be. Knowing that in our meditation practice, just showing up, whether it's for 3 breaths, 3 minutes, 30 minutes, it's an act of kindness, an act of self-care, compassion. Tapping into that sense of kind regard for this one, as our friend, some of you know, Greg Pergament, this one. Putting your hand on your heart, if that feels like the right gesture, or holding your hand. Whatever helps you tap into that sense of kind regard. And taking another bit stronger inhale, exhale, letting go, releasing, allowing. Settling into the present moment with all that is here. So for this part of the meditation, we're just gonna the invitation is to, think of an area in your life. It's not a big area of suffering and or pain, but just not your tallest order, but, something where you feel some resistance to opening to your own pain. That can be, with our self-critical mind, that can be in a relationship, at work or at home. It could be places where you feel, a little more threatened or scared, lonely, frustrated. That general sense of, not wanting something to be here, or wishing something was different in your own mind or in your own life. So internally or externally, And as best you can, without, you know, noticing what those emotions are as best you can without getting into a story about them. What you did or what you didn't do, say, think, you know, whatever it is okay. Whatever it is okay. Just in these few moments where we're shining the light of kind awareness onto these difficulties. There's no need to cling or push away. And even if you can't think of anything or you notice your resistance to doing this, just noticing, bringing kindness, kind awareness to the resistance. And no, again, just being present with the intention of allowing a kind, an open heart. Is the practice, is enough. So, sensing into the emotion, perhaps the thought attached to the emotion. And now, sensing into the feeling, if you can, or the willingness to explore that emotion, that's how it comes up for you in your body. If there's, you know, frustration or disappointment, can be a tightness in the heart, a clenching in the belly. Maybe there's a constriction in the throat or in the jaw. What does that emotion feel like? What does sadness feel like? Or if you're experiencing physical pain, what's the relationship to that in the heart and mind? The type of investigation that can be so helpful. To understand our suffering, to understand our pain, so we know how, when, and what to release. Spending a little time with that in your body. We can feel it in the body, it's easier, a little less likely to get lost in thought. Breathing with the feeling, with the sensation. Being aware that you're breathing with the sensation. Being present to what is actually happening in this moment. Best we can, not to add on to the story or add on to the pain that might be here. And when you're ready, once again, putting a, if you feel called to, a hand on the heart, a touch, hand on hand, a gentle holding of the hand in the lap. whatever feels right. Setting your intention to offer kindness, understanding, and compassion for what is arising. Or kindness for whatever dissatisfaction or dis-ease is present in this heart-mind experience right now. It's important to remember too that what you're feeling is a part of our shared human experience. I am not alone. There's others who feel similarly. We're in this together. Not alone. Repeating the phrases. So I'll be just reciting some phrases and, try them on. Or if you have your own. You know, let my voice drop beneath your own voice and begin with, may I be safe? Repeating silently to yourself, may I be safe? May I be peaceful? May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I be kind to this suffering, to this dis-ease, to this resistance. May I be kind to myself. May I accept myself as I am. May I accept myself as I am in this moment, in these moments. If it's an external circumstance that you're having difficulty with, may I accept my life as it is, just as it is right now. May I accept my life just as it is. May I be safe. May I be safe. May I be peaceful. May I be peaceful. May I be kind to myself. May I be kind. May I accept myself as I am. May I accept my life as it is. Keep repeating the phrases, often helpful to, you know, keeping to getting in touch with the painful emotion. Or just feeling the sensing into the sensations of your hand on your heart. Feeling the warmth of the hand. Knowing that you're extending care and concern for yourself. May I be safe? May I be peaceful? May I be kind to myself? May I accept myself as I am? When the mind wanders, coming back to the phrasings, the touch. Always knowing you can come back to the breath, resting in the breath, reliable source of steadiness. Sit for the last few minutes in silence, and if you sense into that feeling of compassion for yourself, just notice and notice and care for that feeling of compassion. If no feelings, neutral, that's absolutely equally as part of the truth of the present moment. Allowing yourself to savor the goodwill and intention of characters. May all beings be held in love and compassion. Hi. Welcome back. Ah, feels good to remember that. You know, I wasn't going to start with this, but sometimes, you know, it's hard to be, to bring that kind of care to ourselves sometimes. Sometimes, a lot of times. and so, you know, which is why it's really great to remember to practice when we're feeling good, you know, to sort of strengthen that muscle of kindness and compassion. You know, it's like, you know, early on in learning mindfulness, there was the metaphor of learning to, you know, you don't go skydiving, you know, you don't start stitching your parachute right as you're jumping out the airplane. You know, you prepare, you stitch it together. So that's what we're doing, you know. When we're, you know, this is inclining the mind. This is what it means to make these so-called wholesome states of mind and heart strong, you know. And we do that in our practice. Every time we sit, every day we sit, we are strengthening our capacity to, you know, be with the difficult, be with, you know, be with everything, be with the whole, you know, ball of wax, as my mother would say. Hi, Mom. I'm thinking about you. And right, because, oh, didn't expect to talk about this either, but since it's here, I want to, you know, bring that in the room that, you know, I'm very grateful to my mom. I was very blessed, fortunate to have a person who was very good at caring, you know, for young ones and babies. And, you know, she also trained as a nurse too, but just her personality, her generosity of spirit. You know, I just want to acknowledge that she was my first model for compassion, you know, learning how to, you know, as she was caring for me as a child, especially, you know, she was teaching me, she was planting the seed, if you will. Right, which is what we're doing. We're planting seeds. I hope to end with a quote on that, but we'll see. So, right. So often our parents or a caregiver, you know, it's often a grandparent that helps to spark that first notion of what it means to feel compassion for someone. Not only to feel compassion in the West, I'm starting to get into some esoteric things, but it's really logic, you know, in the teachings, it's often taught as different lineages, compassion is taught as like a logical sort of reasoning. And in the West, we sort of, it's like we feel compassion. Yes, it is a quiver in the heart. We feel a calling to, we see someone suffering or some animal or something suffering, and we feel a call to just help, right? We want to help. And we learn that in our recovery too, in programs, Dharma Recovery and 12 Step. We're called to help, you know, it's it's we don't even think about it. We just do it. And I don't want to say too much about it because it gets really, but this logical reasoning, compassion is more based on wisdom. We need compassion and wisdom, right, in our practice for this to balance out. But the wisdom, we see the wisdom of our disease, suffering, First Noble Truth. We see that when we see that and come to understand it with our practice and our mindfulness practice, we see it and know it for ourselves. We are in a position where we are, you know, compassion naturally arises. Not out of pity, which is its near enemy, compassion, right? Pity is the near enemy of compassion, not of self-pity, enemy of self-compassion. Learn, the pity pot, you know, all of that, remember? It's a natural, it arises out of wisdom and compassion and a natural sort of that loving awareness, right? That Jack Kornfield talked about. We're like awash in a sea of loving awareness if we could only, as we undo the blocks to that loving awareness. So in ourselves and all around us. I did want to say something about self-pity or pity, because it's often good to look at the opposite of something when we're defining it to help clarify. So I think pity keeps coming up for me because early on in recovery, and still still comes up, but not nearly, you know, to someone said, I think might've been my sponsor. I heard it in a meeting, but it was like, you know, pour me a drink, right? And self-pity, just wallowing in self-pity. And you don't realize it until you're like, first you have to be told that that's what's happening in a compassionate way, fierce compassion in 12 step and in the teachings too, fierce compassion all the way. You know, often compassion is also telling someone in a loving way, or that they, you know, you'd rather, you hear, say we want something, but rather we get what we need in a loving way. So anyway, the near enemy of compassion is pity. This is from Jack Kornfield, Seeking the Heart of Wisdom. Instead of feeling the openness of compassion, pity says, oh, that poor person over there is suffering. Pity sets up a separation between ourselves and others. It has a sense of distance and remoteness from the suffering of others, as if we ourselves were different. And of course, we're not. The more we practice, the more we see. We are not different. Compassion, on the other hand, experiences the suffering of another as a reflection of one's own pain. I truly understand that, quote. I suffer too. It is a part of our life. It is a sense of our shared suffering. Compassion is the tender readiness of the heart to respond to one's own or another's pain. And that is the difference between sympathy and empathy and compassion. It's that active component, right? It's like, I see myself, or I see someone suffering or in pain or needs help. The crucial piece is, and I want to act on it, right? In some way. Compassion, yes, repeat that. Compassion is the tender readiness of the heart to respond to one's own or another's pain without resentment or aversion, right? Or without the wish to get something in return, which is really, that's an interesting practice, generosity. Kindness. Kindness is so crucial on the path. It is the wish to dissipate the suffering. Compassion embraces those experiencing sorrow and brings them into our heart, right? Which again brings me back to, you know, you might hear that and be like, I am so full with my own that I can't even watch the news. You know, Buddhism instructs, you know, Buddha teaches, bring it all in, right? And sometimes you're just, you can't. And so that's knowing, that's bringing self-compassion and knowing when to, you know, take care of this one, right? You know, and you come back to it bit by bit. And over time, I mean, I know this is true for me, over time, when I see the suffering in the world, I take that news fasts all the time. But when I come back to it, I notice I have much greater capacity to hold it without crumpling, without being overwhelmed by it. And I can only say that that's because of this practice. I don't think I'm exaggerating there. So let's see if there's one more thing on that. So the pity, so the thing about pity, it puts a distance between ourselves and others, which is exactly like, you know, in recovery and in the Dharma, where the teachings are all about merging that gap, right? In wise ways, skillful ways. So we have to let go of a lot of unskillful behaviors around love and compassion in order to, so we don't get overwhelmed and dip into self-pity or other pity, you know, because then we don't want to do anything. It's like all or nothing. I throw myself all in there, or I don't want to do anything because I get overwhelmed. So we're bridging that gap with wisdom and kindness. And kind of one of the main points of this is to see that, you know, we see the dissatisfaction, we, you know, because we cling to things that are impermanent, we're under this illusion that things are going to stay the same. And, you know, we kind of grasp onto that false comfort, which isn't true. We find that out. And then the third leg to that is this idea of without self. And that without self piece is the community. You want to put it in layman's terms, lay people's terms. Sorry. I have to check myself a lot for myself, for others. Right. It's the community. And we see that we are really connected. We see through our own suffering again. We see through our own pain. And then our own joy. We see that we all have this capacity. We all are sort of in the same ball of wax, inside and outside. Anyway, maybe that's not the best metaphor, but that's what I'm thinking about, because now I'm thinking about melting the ball of wax so that we're all this one. Anyway, I digress. So the community, I wanted to say this about the community. I knew in my heart that when I came, just checking the time here, when I entered into recovery, when I first admitted to another person that I didn't say I had a problem. I sort of indicated that I might have a problem with drinking by telling this person, you know, some stories about it. And that this person was wise enough to say, you know, guide me to AA. Suggested it. And I suppose I was ready to hear it. When I got there for my first meeting, what I heard people free themselves. I'm saying this in my terms now, but free themselves from loneliness, the suffering of loneliness and separation. And that really rang true in my heart. So I knew in my heart and in my unconscious that I was in a very compassionate place. In that room, I would never have said it back then because I didn't know what really the deepest levels of compassion was. But I knew in my heart and in my unconscious that the seed was planted that, oh, this is a place where I could actually come and maybe learn how to live differently. And, you know, kind of might get free from some of this pain that I'm feeling, this suffering. And again, words today, not then. And of course, that has unfolded over times, many moons, and increased and deepened and widened as I found mindfulness practice. And in that community, right, in sanghas, in meditation halls, and then in the Dharma and recovery community, you know, meeting Kevin and reading his book in the early when it came out. It just keeps getting that circle, that compassion gets wider and wider. So I knew it, within community, I knew that I was healing. And that's what keeps me coming back. And that was my higher power, you know, first was the group. And then I realized the other day, I've spent more than half my life in community, in groups. What? I was selfish, you know, that's a loaded word, but I really was. I was self-centered. I like that word better. I was self-centered, self-grasping, self-seeking. I still am, but I see it now with kindness, but holy, and I didn't know anything else. And so that's all I knew. So to say that more than half my life now to reflect and say has been spent in community, first in AA, and then then starting in meditation halls and Dharma recovery. When I got cancer last year, and while I was recovering from surgery, I threw myself into a writer's group, cancer survivors. And then there was one more big one, and I can't remember what it was. But the point is, my mom's group. Yeah, don't forget that one 22 years ago. Oh, such a source. So from people who really understand in all these areas, really understand what it's like to feel the pain of suffering and to move through it together, you know, and to teach each other, you know, give ourselves confidence through the group that we can get through this. And what a source of gratitude to reflect on that. Really, you know, because I took those actions, you know, I'm seeing the results, I'm feeling the results, you know, and my faith and confidence continues to grow, you know, in my continued healing, you know. So just a few more things. Like, it's important to note, of course, that compassion is one of the four divine abodes. For limitless ones, love that, limitless ones. Compassion is limitless and unbounded, boundless. The others being loving kindness, you know, metta. Karuna is compassion, that's the Pali word. Sympathetic joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha. And of course, you know, each one of these is intertwined with each of the four. So there's compassion in all of those. There's equanimity in all of these, right? Right. This steadiness of heart, this equanimity is beautiful because it is, you know, in all of these, you know, practices of loving kindness and compassion, we're learning how to not fall into the overwhelm. You know, maybe we're a caregiver right now. You know, in this room, there's so many, you know, if I was going to ask you in the chat in the beginning, I forgot, like for everyone just to sort of write in the chat, like what, you know, just to sort of put out there, like people they know who are suffering in some way, right? Yourself or someone else. Certainly all of those people who are suffering in their addiction right now, each one of us, either we're going through it, we've been through it, or we're going to go through it. And so, you know, the equanimity in particular, we're learning how to, like, be with that, you know, wishing for happiness and ease of suffering and pain, but not owning it, not, you know, it's their action. Another person's action is dependent upon their happiness, is dependent upon their own actions. My happiness is dependent upon my own actions, right? My ease, my peace, my joy. The four Brahma Viharas. I had a chance to look up, you know, with the internet, it's so fun. It also is just very, it's spent a lot of time, which is great. But not when you have a deadline. And the many, many instances of the Buddha's actually teaching, actually like helping a suffering person, helping an ill person, right? Hands-on. Of course, his teachings, when people come to him in pain, there's a story of a woman, Padakara. Some of you may know this story of a woman who fell in love with someone outside of her royal caste, and they ran off together. And, you know, tragedy upon tragedy, you know, befall this woman. And, she, you know, lost her husband, lost two babies. I mean, and she's actually one of the Buddhist nuns. She became a nun and then an arahant. She was one of the group of Buddhist nuns who, whose writings were preserved, or whose the oral tradition first was preserved in writings. In a book on the Buddhist nuns, some of you might know the name of it, I'm escaping right now. Something about free. Padakara. So grief, sorrow, despair, hopelessness, helplessness, ended up going to the Buddha, and people were shunning her. Oh, a woman can't do that, can't go in there, can't see him. But he's like, no, come. You know, reestablish your mindfulness, or establish your mindfulness, right? Your steadiness of heart. That's the first thing he said. Took her in. So all these stories of great compassion and kindness by the Buddha. And of course, the teachings are very fierce compassion. He went through his own suffering for many years, and under the tree, on the night of enlightenment, and the slings and the arrows and the temptations of Mara. And he just said, put his hand on the ground, and he's like, no, you know. Anyway, beautiful, beautiful teachings. And I feel like, you know, in this group, we are in recovery. We are teaching each other all the time, whether we know it or not. We're learning from each other. And, you know, it's a way to a fulfilling and wholesome, speaking for myself, but I believe it. I mean, as Buddha said, you know, don't believe me, come and see for yourself. But I believe that it's leading me to a more fulfilling and sustained, wholesome and happy life. And, you know, my daughter, I'll just end with this, but my daughter's home for spring break. She came home yesterday. She came home with a friend, and they're going camping today. It's going to be cold and rainy. I was reflecting on something, teaching this class today, right? I was reflecting on something, aspect of myself that I wasn't pleased with or something. And she said, wait a minute, what would you tell me if you heard, you know, me talk about myself like that? My daughter, my 22-year-old daughter said, and we laughed, and we said, oh, okay, you know. Anyway, I feel like there's great hope here, and in this path of compassion and wisdom. And I will end with the seed quote, because this is in Joseph Goldstein's Mindfulness, which I'm going through in great detail. Been over like a year and a half now with a Dharma friend, and it's been great, great fun, and really beautiful practice to do together. So So this comes at a place in the aspect of right intention. Yes, right. So the second fold on the path, and compassion is the third non-harm, the intention for non-harming, the third aspect to right thought. And he talks about, first he talks about empathy or self-compassion as the first step. Second step, to put our shoes to put ourselves in the shoes of others, and then putting others before ourselves, and how that can seem overwhelming sometimes, can be an inspiration. Yes, of course, think of Mother Teresa, think of Rosa Parks, you know, refusing to give up her seat. Think of Harriet Tubman in the Underground Railroad, my hero in fourth grade, heroine, Shiro. Martin Luther King Jr. So he said, so we're inspired, but it's also daunting. Can we ever be able to live to this degree, with this degree of compassion, this great generosity of spirit? He says, we need great humility in nourishing this aspiration. We can simply plant the seeds of this great motivation of bodhicitta, the awakened heart, mind. That our lives and our practice be for the benefit of all, and water and nurture those seeds until they gradually become a force for great good in the world. Henry David Thoreau beautifully expressed this possibility. Though I do not believe that a plant will spring up where no seed has been, I have great faith in a seed. I have great faith in a seed. Convince me that you have a seed there, and I am prepared to expect wonders. So I will leave you with that. Not leave you, because you're still here. And I, let's just pause before we open for reflections, questions. Sort of let those words land how they will. And while they're still fresh, actually, let's express some desire or inspiration, aspiration to let those ripples of the Buddha's teachings, of Dharma and recovery teachings, let those, let the energy of those words resonate out to others. All right. Okay. And we have a few minutes left. Went on a little longer than I hoped, but you get excited. If anyone has any, reflections or questions, be happy to hear them. And if you're thinking it, someone else is thinking it too.
It is a hand up.
Sean, huh?
Yeah, hi. I'm saying Deborah would like to speak, I think.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, you're on the other. I think you're thank you.
Thank you, Sean. I just want to say, as much as I love coming here for Kevin, it's a breath of fresh air to feel you, Anne. So thank you. And you're right about the groups. You started that passage by talking about roots. And I realized that all my groups, I have roots in them. And that's a fascinating metaphor. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Deborah. Appreciate you being here. a lot of wisdom in those groups, a lot of compassion. It is. And, you know, when I, maybe others had this experience, but I didn't understand what was actually happening in my 12-step group for years until the compassion piece. It's like, wow, you know, yes, we do service. It's the 12th step. It sort of leads to that. It's sort of built in. It's sort of like, it's almost like you should know that, but I think I needed to have it spelled out. And I, you know, to know that that's what I was doing. That's what others were doing for me and to me and through me. We do it through each other. Yes, Sean.
Yes. Can you hear me all right?
I can. It's a little difficult, but I'm listening.
All right. I'll speak a little loud. I want to thank you so much. You did a great job. That was amazing. Thank you so much for teaching today. That was, and holding space. You know, you shared a lot of wisdom. And I related to your point about suffering and the news fasts, you know, because
suffering and the
news fasts, like fasting from the news.
Oh, news fast. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And I related to that point I relate to like that point expanding to like Tonglen. I have difficulty with Tonglen, and part of me wonders if it's my lack of self-centeredness, you know, or like my self-centeredness that is the issue, but also feeling so much, being an empath and feeling so much of that suffering, you know. Yeah, I don't know. But and something else you said about the near enemies reminded me of like maybe the difference between compassion and pity is almost similar to sympathy and empathy. In that sympathy, there's that sense of separation, but empathy, you're feeling with, you know? But then, like you said, compassion is that push to act that I never thought of. So I thank you for that.
Thank you, Sean. Yeah, I wanted to point you to this book. In fact, I wanted to read from it, but I didn't. It's a great, great definition of compassion also. But in it, this one, do you know this book? The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying?
Oh, no, I've never. I know of it, but I've never been exposed.
You might be interested. Others might be interested. And it's not just about, I mean, Soyal Rinpoche, Tibetan monk, spends a lot of time in the West, but works with people who are dying. And I don't think it's just for people who are working with people who are dying. Indeed, not. But there's a chapter, Compassion, the Wish Fulfilling Jewel. And in it, I think he talks about Tonglen. And I can't really speak to Tonglen myself, because I have practiced it in bits and pieces, but it's not something I take on as my practice, in part because it is difficult. You know, it is a difficult practice. Lots of good stories in here about how people are cured. You know, they'll be on their deathbed and they practice Tonglen intensively and they're cured. In the 11th century, when this was developed, he goes into the story about how Tonglen was developed and how the monk went into a colony of lepers, people with leprosy, and that there was spontaneous remission. Healing. Some incredible stories with this practice. And so he also talks about how to do it. Great chapter on compassion. And also really, I found it, I had an inspiration to look on my shelf and here it was. It was really interesting how I found this last night. But anyway, I recommend that one. I'm noticing it's 11 o'clock. Thank you, Sean. Thank you. I'm noticing it's 11 and I see people who need to leave, and that's great. That's fine. So you know, we can close, but if you want to stick around too, I'm welcome to do that too as well. Again, pausing, may all of us in this circle of love and compassion and Dharma and recovery, may we may we accept ourselves just as we are, and may we practice that to the best of our ability throughout our day, throughout our lives, recovery. Peace, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
Good job. See you in a few weeks. Hope we don't get rained out at the retreat.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah, Steve, have a retreat. Have a good one. All right.
Thank you. We'll see you later.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ann.
Thank you.
Ann, I have a question. It's Eleanor over here.
Eleanor, hi.
Hi. I love it that you talked about compassion and self-compassion today. And what's coming up for me in my life is that at this point in my life, at this point in the pandemic, I find myself in the midst of a group of people who are suffering a lot. It's not COVID related stuff. It's age related stuff. It's mental health stuff. In one case, it's relapse of a dear friend. And I find for me, the filled with compassion for all of these people, that's not easy. It's that I find myself that edge of being too drained and too over the codependent bit of saying, God, yes, I can fix this thing. Let me just take that on. And I can't do that.
You know? Wait, Mike, I think your microphone is on.
Mike, you're mute.
Yeah, I want to hear. Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
So for me, the dance is, yes, of course, I'd love to step right in and offer my opinion or my help or my assistance or my company or whatever is called for. And then the danger is knowing that I've done that before and gotten, you know, how much can I afford to give? I'm conscious, aware of this all the time. How much do I want to give? Do I want to offer? How much generosity can I extend without expecting anything? But if nothing is fed back to me, where do I draw that line? You know, how do I have compassion and act compassionately toward people that I care for and not unbalance myself in the process? So I'm not looking for an answer. It's just, you know, that's the dance for me, is staying balanced in that.
Yeah. And I, you know, again, if I mean, even in these squares, raise our hand if we are seeking a balance, trying to find, you know, so first of all, you're not alone. And you know, right, when I was reading, getting more into the readings here on compassion and the whole point of the path is to live a life of generosity, mm-hmm. and compassion without seeking anything in return. Mm-hmm. Like what? You know, and it can be very subtle and it can be very strong or like, you know, right. Yes, of course. Not feeling appreciated. I, you know, the feeling of, you know, just doing all this stuff and then not feeling appreciated. That's, I don't know if that's the word you would use, but it's that sense of like, to keep going, I need this. And I'm like, well,
yeah,
you know, maybe I don't, maybe I need to sit with that feeling of wanting,
mm-hmm.
Heard or get, you know, feedback or I'm on the right track or, you know, whatever that wanting is in me, and just acknowledge that that's an energy that is draining me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, something about it's like this compassion, if it veers over into grasping, which maybe that's part of what it is. Like, mm-hmm. what if I want something in return, that grasping, then that's really what burns me out.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's helpful, but I hear you, and it's difficult,
yeah,
to be surrounded by people who are suffering and,
yeah,
and the wish to relieve, may you be free from pain and suffering. Maybe it's just that phrase, you know, my wishes for your happiness does not depend on my wishes for you. And mm-hmm. some of the equanimity praises and the, yeah, might be helpful.
Yeah. Thank you. Sure. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that.
I have the same.
I'll go on. By the way, we're recording, but we're not, this won't go on.
Yeah. Okay, great. I have the